Living in my own world, didn't understand that anything can happen when you take a chance.
Good morning, and you're listening to WMFO in Medford. That's WMFO Medford, also known as Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio. And we're emanating from 91.5 FM. Also go to WMFO.org by computer and check out our live programming and our not-so-live programming sometimes. And you're about to listen to Socialist Alternative Radio, talk and music from a working-class democratic socialist perspective. We've been on the air here for over a decade, I think, WMFO. And it's New Year's Eve Day, and we're here to talk about some things that are confronting us right now and are going to continue, unfortunately, to confront us in 2018, but also some possible ways to fight back, to resist, that overword used, resist. And anyways, today's show is co-hosted by myself, Jeff, and... Oh, wait, Jai, hold on. I made an error. Go ahead, please say that again.
My name is Jai. I'm also a member of Socialist Alternative.
Thank you, Jai. So Jai's never been on the radio before, is that correct?
Never, no.
Never
it's
been,
very weird.
Never been on this show.
Yeah.
Although, like Jai mentioned, he's a member of Socialist Alternative from Worcester.
Yes.
Worcester,
yes.
Mass.
Worcester native.
And an interesting perspective, which I hope we can get into, is Jai became a socialist, joined Social Alternative as a high school student, and now is in freshman year in college and continuing to be a socialist, Marxist, and a leader, actually, in our Worcester organization. So before we get into talking to Jai some more, I just want to mention again, you are listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, and we are here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and we are, you know, basically talking about socialism, democratic socialism, Marxism, all sorts of topics like that, but not just for the reason of giving you alternative info or alternative news, real news, actually. we're also here to we're here to try and organize, to put it bluntly. We're here to organize you if you're open to that. We're here to get you involved in the socialist movement and involved with Socialist Alternative. To find out more about Socialist Alternative, please go to socialistalternative.org and various ways to check us out. There's Socialist Alternative on Facebook, although that's a, like, there's some sort of like hash or something after, or backslash or something after our name on Facebook. But you can find us on Facebook pretty easily. You can also find, you can go to this radio show. We have a Facebook page, Socialist Alternative Radio, and that will have links to Socialist Alternative, et cetera, et cetera. So while you're listening in this New Year's Eve day, keep in mind getting involved in 2018 to be, sorry, I just got distracted. One of our co-hosts just showed up. Diego, welcome.
Sorry, I left.
No, that's fine. Hey, watch out. Watch out for that mic. It's a little loose. And sorry for the techno talk for the audience. Let me just pull up Diego's mic. So co-hosting today is myself, Jai End. Diego.
Hi.
Hey.
And Diego was here, was co-hosting last week and in other times as well. And so I thought today we're going to talk about, just give you an overview of the show. We're going to be talking with Jai about why he became a socialist. And then we're going to get into, hopefully, some discussions about the... you brought... Diego brought in a Fugees.
Yeah.
What track do you want me to play?
Fugees.
Which one?
The Mask.
The Mask, which is...
Number 10.
Number 10, brilliant.
Yep.
So thank you for bringing that in.
Good choice.
And we
through the crates earlier, and I'm like, yeah, I haven't listened to that in a couple of decades now.
I brought in a new copy of Sandinista by The Clash because I lost my old one. I know that's maybe not as exciting, but whatever. It is kind of exciting. Anyway, so I'm going to play a song by The Clash, actually, when we take a break, that mentions Marx and Engels. So there. Anyway, so getting back to our overview of the show, we won't get to all this, unfortunately, but we'll try to talk about the homeless crisis and the crisis hitting the extreme weather crisis here in New England and other parts of the United States. And by the way, Jai, just we mentioned earlier, Jai has not been on the show before or on the radio. So again, welcome, Jai.
Thank you.
We do have international listeners. So sometimes
cool.
I will reference our where we are.
Ah.
And I'm not just being like pretentious. We do have international listeners and nationwide listeners because of the wonders of the internet, which could be even more wonderful under socialism, by the way.
Yes. The recent passing of abolishing net neutrality in the near future is very foreboding and is going to feature massive amounts of what's essentially censorship of what will most disproportionately affect left media.
Including maybe this radio show in ways that we can't predict. I mean, a lot of our listeners go to WMFO.org. Can you hear yourself, Diego?
Hello?
Yeah, you're okay. You're okay.
Okay.
Yep. go to WMFO.org. You know, that's that's online, the online presence of the station, obviously, to listen. You know, our signal here is a pretty strong one for a college station, but still has its weak relative to the commercial stations.
Yeah.
So people have to listen online and stuff. Oh, you brought in a book for us.
A little review.
What is it?
It's Communists in Harlem During the Depression.
Ah.
How the Communist Mason. Party Organized Harlem back in the 30s.
It. Is it new?
What
year did it come out? That's interesting.
It's fairly new.
So we'll talk about that too.
Yeah. 1983.
Brand new.
Well, it still might be. I mean... You know,
it's relevant.
Unless
sure
there's
it's
new this has been a you know uncovering of new sources, which okay, so we'll talk about that. We also have some stuff on to discuss about extreme poverty, which is an extreme wealth. I mean, there's actually been a discussion about inequality, I guess, basically in a way from a socialist standpoint. We also have something I can't read in my notes. Oh yeah, Cornel West. And this debate between Cornel West and Ta-Nehisi Coates. Yeah. Am I saying his name incorrectly?
Ta-Nehisi,
sorry. And also just straight up Cornel West stuff I could talk about. Mm. I met him a couple times.
That's awesome.
Which we could talk about.
That's very cool.
Let me just name drop for a second. Yeah. I met Cornel West. anyway, I don't want to get into that. All right, so, what does that say?
Well, you were talking about homelessness.
Yeah.
I'm close to it now, almost.
Uh-oh, what happened?
Yeah, it's a little...
They raised
little
the rent?
Remote. Yeah.
Ah,
okay, hold on. Let me read this to Diego Oyola, the second floor tenant of 96 Willow Street in Cambridge. This letter is to inform you that starting on February 1st, 2018, Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year.
There will be a rent increase for your apartment. Your rent will be $950 now per month, $950. At this time, we, the landlords, feel that a rent increase is necessary. We continue to have increased operating costs, and our rents are well below the market rate of this area. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. That's the sad thing. I can hear people listening.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah,
blah.
Happy New Year. Merry
they
Christmas.
Gave it to me on Christmas Day. Oh
nice God,
Christmas.
Really?
That's brutal.
That's really brutal.
It's here.
Whoa.
Then it's like, oh, my mother's like, oh, that's a great Christmas gift.
That's obscene, actually.
Yeah.
Can you think?
That's disgusting.
Bah, humbug.
Well, also, this is a bad thing to say in a way, but I can just imagine people listening saying that's not that bad a rent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For Cambridge,
that's how sad it is. No, I'm just saying, Boston
what's
is
so
crazy.
Brutal about it.
Boston
exactly.
area is crazy. It's just crazy. No, that's a horrible rent. I mean, that's
well,
like,
now it's $950. Next year, what is it going to be?
Yeah, exactly.
A couple years from now,
yeah,
or whatever.
Exactly.
But also,
so slowly and surely,
yeah,
being pushed.
But also, when people talk about salaries versus rents and all that, it's so screwed up in America because people talk about they're always talking about their gross salary.
Yeah. Mm.
They're before tax salary, before deduction salary. I have like a $10,000 gap or $15,000 gap or something like that between my gross salary and my take home because I'm paying for family health care through deductions, my taxes, which are horrible. And you know this crap they say, I warn Jai about our digressions on the show. They're all relevant.
It forms the whole.
Yes.
It's very organic.
Yes.
Blah, blah, blah. So anyway.
Which is good. It's dialectical material.
Yeah, that's, yeah. It's all part of a process. When Trump and those idiots say the rich are the ones paying the taxes, they're talking about the income tax.
Yeah.
And there are so many people making low incomes, as we'll get into later, that they're not paying tax on their income, but they're paying taxes out of their paycheck up the wazoo. They're paying huge amounts of money.
And taxes on the things that they buy to
Yes,
survive.
Of course, yes. So so they're actually paying the majority of taxes. Working people are paying the majority of taxes because as a percentage of their take-home pay, you know, you get the state tax, the federal tax, you know, also excise taxes, which doesn't come out of your paycheck, but excise taxes, you get the
sales taxes,
et cetera. And I'm leaving something out, I can't remember. That all comes out of, you know, it's not your income tax per se, but it's other taxes that are cutting your income actually drastically.
I figured out the other day, I was looking at, okay, if it's 19%, then I'm being, my $12 really is 970-ish, 975.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So,
yep.
I'm not worth $12 an hour.
Yeah.
You're not?
Oh, with the deduction.
To the bosses?
No, I mean in general.
Oh, you're not making. Yeah.
You know, you're really, if you do the math.
What do you call that? I'm spacing on a
value?
Basic term. Value you add,
yeah.
Correct. Thank you very much. The value you add is way beyond $9.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I mean, way beyond
value, price, and profit.
Nice!
It's very good.
Listeners, read Value, Price, and Profit by Karl Marx.
It's very dense. I wouldn't recommend starting with Value, Price, and Profit.
Yeah, you have to find.
You gotta start with poverty.
Intro
what
to
was
Marxism.
That? What first one before the Communist Manifesto? Poverty. No, I
wouldn't do that one either.
Yeah.
No,
I think I'd just start with the manifesto.
Maybe the Communist Manifesto. Yeah. But also, there's a lot of like sort of intro to Marxism things, just to find them.
Breakdowns.
Yeah, I don't know one I could mention that. Well, go to socialistworld.net, the Committee for Workers International website, and then go to the linked website, Marxist.net. Is that what it's called? Marxist.net,
yes.
And you'll find an intro guide to Marxist economics. But that's great you were doing that. Yeah, this is, by the way, Value, Price, Profit is Karl Marx, who was, by the way, an organizer, not just a philosopher, debating with the head of a carpenter's union in Britain at the time, and this is back in the 19th century, so it's, you know, this carpenter had a lot of, these ideas still exist. He had a very backward idea. He was a leader of carpentry. He said, he's basically saying, we can't ask for a wage increase because then the bosses, the equivalent of contractors today are big contracting companies. Like, what was he saying? Like, they'll go out of business and stuff like that, and they won't pay us as much.
It would increase prices by the same percentage degree, so it wouldn't actually improve the conditions of workers.
And Marx very politely just really got rid of that idea pretty quickly.
Yeah, a very in-depth analysis on how economic laws actually work and how raising wages does not cause massive price inflation, which is a point... like the capitalists still use to this day.
Oh, yeah.
With $15 an hour.
Yep.
That's what they said in Seattle, viciously. That's what all the anti-15 PACs and campaigns said. We've had 15 in Seattle for, what, over a year now?
Prices aren't... And just to regulate the people...
The economy's doing better in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But just even people around here, when we get into the debate, just regular people on the street or at work, oh, you increase the wages, you know, everything else will increase. Mm-hmm. That's not right. Yeah. What are you talking about?
No, it's not.
You're giving more buying power. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, also, the businesses are limited as to what they can do in terms of price increases. They can just increase prices to whatever they want. Yeah.
They'd go out of business because one would buy from them.
Yeah, they have to. It's based on other variables. Also, by the way, they can take a wage increase, and if their business is their business is expanding, they'll still make more profit even with the wage increase. Mm-hmm. Or, God forbid, they suck it up like we do all the time and learn to operate on less revenue coming in for whatever amount of time based on the wage increases. There's so many, and that's what that gets into, that work value price bracket gets into, is there's
it's
so
like
many
variables.
It's like
that rent increase for me. I got to suck it up. Now I'm going to slash the food budget that I have in half.
Yeah.
And my mother's going to help me out with $50. So it's like a little, you know.
My wife and I talk about that. It's like, because of the holidays, I've been like extra hungry, even though I shouldn't be eating. I'm supposed to be losing weight now, but I've been like, you know, it's again this holiday buying food thing, you know, and like my body's telling me to eat more because it's cold or something. I don't know what's going on. So I went grocery shopping 3 times this week, and every time I came back, my wife Tina was like, "What did you do? Why did you buy this stuff?" So we're trying to cut back on buying food, and I'm like, and we have 2 kids, and I'm like, that's not where I want to cut, but, you know, you have to, and it's sad. We're going to get into that later, by the way. Yeah. But we wanted to start off the show, if it's all right. I think I mentioned this to you, Diego, sort of why I'm a socialist interview with Jai, because I think, we often have guests, but we don't usually have guests. We have, but we usually have guests that became socialists in high school. That's very interesting to me. Mm. And, you know... anyway, why don't we just throw that open question? I know you did a thing for the paper, which I think we read, but you don't have to stick to that. Say whatever you want, that or other stuff. So, So Jai, why'd you become a socialist?
this is one of the most interesting questions to me in terms of like, it sounds like a very basic question, but it's something that's very complex you know, as me and Jeff were actually talking about a little bit earlier, you know, the development of everything is dialectical from, you know, the materialist perspective, understanding of the reality of what's going on, that reality is shaped by actual conditions, not by these broad forming ideas. That has to be brought to even an individual person's development. Like how me, how Jeff, how Diego became socialists are all different in terms of the actual mechanisms that created that. But that can be analyzed from a materialist perspective. And I think trying to do that for myself was kind of hard, but I managed to do it somehow for the article. So I'm going to miss things when I explain.
No, that's okay.
You know what I mean?
Because of what you're saying, it's impossible to get all the variables
in there. It's impossible to really fully grasp it, especially as young as I am and not having the same capability of looking back and really understanding things prior. It's the one of the major influences was definitely like the Black Lives Matter movement, I think was probably the biggest thing, kind of the sort of linchpin, and also a lot of not really left-leaning, but kind of left-leaning liberal media that I was consuming, like of the smaller variety, like, you know, the John Stewarts, the Trevor Noahs, those types. More John Stewart than Trevor Noah, and kind of really understanding that a lot of these systems in place, the Democratic Party, were not these, you know, noble institutions as they've been portrayed. They're not these historically progressive institutions even. And I was just kind of very in this, you know, stuck place, not really understanding like where to go. I was not at the time, you know, prepared to break with the Democratic Party, but at the same time, I just didn't understand how a party, because a lot of this developments of in myself in terms of these political leanings I'm talking about happened during the 2016 primary elections. Mm-hmm. And so when we're talking about a party that the official sort of DNC internal response that was leaked through the Podesta emails and whatnot, that was told to the candidates during the primary campaign in terms of dealing with Black Lives Matter was to be nice to them, don't make an enemy of them, but don't make any promises. Like, that was, like, not verbatim, but that was in official emails sent out by DNC executives to Democratic candidates. Don't make any promises to Black Lives Matter. Just be nice to them. Don't make an enemy of them. And when I saw that, I was stunned. It's almost as if, because the things that BLM was asking for, the things that they were fighting for, the agitation that they were trying to do during the primary campaigns, at one point they even sort of took over, so to speak, one of Bernie's speeches, which I'll go into in a minute, they weren't asking for these insane things. They were just asking to stop killing, for police to stop basic killing
equality,
people.
Yeah.
Asking for not even full equality, but the most basic aspects of not being murdered in the streets for disproportionately Black youth, but for all people. Fighting, and we've seen that historically, them proving that they're not just fighting for the lives of Black or even brown people. They're fighting for everyone's lives that are being tarnished by police brutality. They couldn't even give them that. They couldn't even pretend to care about that. And that really blew my mind. And even Bernie's, the speech in which BLM, some BLM activists, Bernie let them sort of take over his sort of speech, even he didn't make any real concrete promises. And I was just sitting here thinking, What is this party? What does it actually offer in terms of this very most basic aspect of just decent, being a decent human being, in vowing to end literal murder by policemen? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The most basic thing. And it just didn't sit right with me. And I just became very sort of disaffected by it. And then, I interacted with Evan specifically, a friend of mine.
I was going to get into that. Hold on. That's great. Okay. That's great. No, so you did a really good job, I think, of talking about sort of the thought process you were into, your mindset, what happened that left you open more to getting involved with socialism. Were you an activist at all in high school?
I was not.
Before that?
No, okay. Not at all.
Interesting.
I didn't really have any experience in activism.
We'll talk about the walkout in a minute.
Yeah, the walkout's very interesting.
That was a great story. But anyway, so prior to that, interesting. I didn't know that. I thought perhaps you were active somehow. Maybe you and Evan were.
I wasn't, no.
Okay.
I didn't have any direct activity, but as these sorts of developments were going on, as the primary elections were happening, and then the ultimate betrayal of the Democratic Party, of the betrayal of Bernie, I was just like, this party's not.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And then when Bernie bent the knee to Hillary, I was just like, no, this is not.
Yeah. I've seen that come.
I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
But many progressives, Jesse Jackson, yes. Dennis Kucinich, the list is endless of...
Yeah.
McGovern,
many. Yeah. They corral progressives into the party. Mm-hmm. And voting for it. There's no real in the party. There's no membership or whatever. But they corral them into identifying with and voting with the Democratic Party, and then turn it over to the representatives of capital, mm-hmm. which they are too. But I mean, even more obvious representatives of capital, of capitalism. So you've anticipated my next question in a way. How'd you run into going from the dialectical part? But let's go to the materialist part. Mm-hmm. So here we are in the United States with no mass Socialist Party, no mass Workers Party. I've explained on the air before when I've interviewed people and talked about my own development, it seems somewhat almost accidental in a way to become a socialist because of no mass big party you can easily run into or check out. So what happened in your case? How did you actually get involved with SA and a Social Alternative, and how did you find out about us and so on?
I mean, it was purely dumb luck, to be frank. A friend of a friend of mine from high school, introduced me to a now one of...
While you were in high school.
While I was in high school, yeah. Mm-hmm. Introduced me to now one of my best friends, Evan O'Lair. Has he been on the show before?
He wanted to come on, and I was said, sure, and then he didn't follow up. And I'm kind of tossing the blame on him when it's maybe a little bit mine too. Yeah. Like I didn't remind him of it enough or something.
Yeah. But I know he's been on the Worcester State Show.
He should come on, definitely.
He's also a member of Socialist Alternative out in Worcester as
Leading
well.
Leading member in Worcester, like Chai.
Yep. Yeah. And just having these very, you know, frank discussions with him that I was never prepared for, never really even planned on having, just while we were hanging out about sort of the realities of capitalism, this sort of, the contradictions, not in those exact words, not in in words that I was better able to understand in my very early development, but just talking about these different revolutions, talking about the brutal repression and the of U.S. imperialism in the Vietnam War and Korean War and all these different sorts of things, it just became very clear the system of capitalism doesn't make any sense. And I had a very surface level understanding of that from, you know, from largely from that sort of anti-imperialist basis, not really a full understanding of sort of the scientific nature of Marxism in itself, but just that capitalism is not the option and that I need an alternative. And so when Evren, you know, invited me to a branch meeting and was telling me about the organization, one of the biggest things that impressed me the most was Shama Sawant, of course, our elected official in Seattle, which Evren always talks about whenever we talk to any, whenever we try to recruit people, because it's a very effective tool, and it was very effective on me. The fact that we have concretely proven our politics capable, and that we are a real organization that was able to elect someone and that is able to continue to function and continue building across the country. And in political solidarity with Committee for Workers International fighting for socialism across the world.
Yep.
All those things, they very well sat within me, and I was sort of primed and ready to become a socialist. I just needed that push, and Evren very much provided that push.
What's the first thing Evren gave you to read? Do you remember? Was it the paper, maybe? Socialist Alternative newspaper?
I think it might have been the paper.
Yeah. What's the first, like, theoretical, do you remember?
It was the new member education pack.
Oh,
actually,
cool. Okay. Yeah, that's good.
Me, him, and Nick Worst, another leading member in Worcester, we did our education discussions together when I first joined.
And Nick's only a couple years older than you as well, right?
Yeah. I think he's 21.
That's great. So you get involved with Socialist Alternative, finding out more about Marxism. What do you think so far? You recommend it to others?
Would highly recommend. Yeah.
I mean, you're putting a lot of time into it. Let's tell the audience you're very dedicated.
Yeah.
Very engaged.
I mean, if I put this much time into it, if I don't recommend it to others, what am I doing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Why am I here?
We were talking about that before we were on air. You know, if this doesn't make sense, what did I just spend 35 years doing or whatever? But you're right. I mean, capitalism does not make sense. But it's not purely an ideological struggle. It's organizing, people learning through experience that it doesn't work.
And I think that was probably one of the hardest lessons for me first running the organization is it's almost as if I didn't really fully understand the point of the organization, so to speak. Because while it was Socialist Alternative is incredibly impressive and has only grown more and more with recent developments in Minneapolis and whatnot. At that point in time, it just didn't feel necessary, so to speak, because like I said, I was so underdeveloped, so not really understanding what Marxism actually was or what socialism actually was, in any form. The need for organization was not ever present. But because, you know, Evren kept pushing me, I stayed along, and I began to realize, like, as doing a lot of those education discussions and through, you know, a really good meeting, a really good lead off, I think that was done by James on BLM, I understood that in order to fight for these things, in order to fight for like real change, you need organization. You need to be building. And even though, you know, SA can't go out tomorrow and, you know, shut down all of society on its own through our own sheer, you know, power and influence over the working class, that's something we can and need to build to do. Right. That's not something that's done overnight.
Let me throw this out and see if it resonates or if you agree. What you went through, I think, is pretty typical. You get involved and you're not aware of the limitations of the organization. And you're not aware when you first join of like fully about consciousness, like how other people are thinking and so on. So you find out you start running into obstacles. In your case, however, I think we were able to make things a little concrete with tapping into the work in the high school, the issues in the high school around the, a pollution, poisoning of the student body in some ways through the lead and PCBs in Worcester. And what high school was it? Doherty and Burncoat, two of them, yeah.
And there were lead in almost all of them.
Yeah.
But the PCBs, the specific type of asbestos that causes cancer and has been linked to multiple cancer cases and multiple teachers in both schools was in Doherty and Burncoat.
Yeah. So working with the Worcester Teachers Union called EAW, working with students in SA and some outside of SA, we did our best to publicize that situation. We had tables and passed out leaflets and tried to do a walkout, which ultimately was not as large as we wanted, but students did walk out. You walked out, everyone walked out, others from other places. And we had a rally in downtown Worcester. Was it cold then? I remember it being cold.
It was cold. Very cold.
Okay. But it wasn't a bad turnout, right? If I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was
40 or something?
It was pretty good.
50,
yeah. Around
60?
Around 40 high school students and a few more college students.
Yeah. And others. I'm neither. I was there.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So we've had these interesting rallies in Worcester, Mass. We're talking about Worcester, Massachusetts, second largest city in New England. We've had when Trump first got elected, we had a rally that first week.
Yes.
That was
the Saturday after.
How many was that, 120 or 200 people or something?
It was almost 400.
400, yeah.
Yeah.
Why am I undercounting our own rallies?
I don't know.
I should be like,
why are you undercounting
going a little above? Always round up when it comes to rally talk.
1,000.
But anyway, it was impressive.
Yeah.
Then we've had some that were smaller, and but that's okay for us because we just say, okay, it's a standout, not a rally, and we'll pass out leaflets and talk to people.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we had that rally. So all that stuff around those issues, I think, did that help concretize what we were about a little more?
100%.
Yeah. Good.
It's very much a matter of experiencing the struggle, and also a lot of really learning the theory as well. I think one of the sort of the best sort of theoretical documents that we've gone over so far that I've read personally was probably the Transitional Program by Leon Trotsky. And sort of interestingly enough, the section that sort of hit me the most, so to speak, was the section on organizing in fascist countries, which is weird because obviously we're not in one of those.
Right, it was written at a certain time.
It was written at a specific point in time in 1938, in which Hitler was rising to power. Hitler
Spain,
was in power. Spain,
Italy,
Mussolini.
Yep.
It was in a very brutal time period. But I think that the matter of sort of discussing how to organize underground, the fact that at this stage, any organization in any sort of fascist country of the Fourth International at the time, the Communist International that Trotsky was building, had no real power in terms of shutting down society. It's very much in a propagandistic phase. It needs to be building its forces in an underground way. I think that was one of the most significant aspects that really cemented in my mind that an organization is not built overnight. Even absent of those incredibly brutal conditions of fascism, even in a so-called democratic republic, an organization is not built at the snap of the fingers.
Yeah.
The Bolshevik Party did not grow to hundreds of thousands of members in the period of 1917 because they just snapped their fingers and the working class just suddenly realized that socialism is the way, right? It took organization, it took fighting, it took struggle.
Yeah. That's really interesting, your point, because we're the last leftist organization or social organization to abuse the term fascism. We we try to use that as scientifically as possible.
100%. Yeah.
Which means a dictator that has used extreme right-wing populism to mobilize a part of the population, usually middle class
humans.
And then take that, destroy workers' organizations, parties, unions, and so on.
Yeah.
So it's got a very specific purpose under capitalism. It's not just a nasty leader.
Exactly.
Right? However, having said that, and the fact that we're not in a fascist situation here, although there is the far right, as we've talked about in other shows, is emboldened by the election of Trump and his racism and misogyny and everything. Despite that, we're not in a fascist situation. We don't have to work underground. Obviously, we're talking on the air. We're talking on a radio show. It's very interesting. You should focus on that, because there are glimpses of what that could be like in this country, based on the incredible militarization of this country and the incredible militarization of the police force.
Yeah.
So if almost every day you can read about some innocent person being murdered by the police, if you see all the resources of society going towards the military, which is already 18 times larger than the next largest military or something like that. That's a statistic I've heard about before or read about before. Then it's not fascism, but you can kind of like extrapolate a little bit to what fascism might really entail in the United States. And a lot of people, there's been books written and so on of people saying we're not there, but we're not that far from it. It could happen here, you know. I'm echoing a title of a book, a famous socialist writer,
Sinclair
Lewis. It Can Happen Here.
Yeah.
He wasn't a socialist, happen here. Jack London wrote one.
It took place in the 30s, right?
Yeah, The Iron Heel, Jack London. So you get involved, you join, this time goes fast.
Yeah.
On the radio. You get involved, you join, and now you're in college, so you're in a different environment, you're in a new city. I don't know what my question is exactly, just sort of what are you developing in your head about the near future perspectives, what you're going to be doing? I mean, you're still doing a lot in Worcester, so that's great, but... I don't know, like, what's the immediate perspectives, the immediate tasks?
Immediate tasks would be to, you know, build a significant base amongst where I'm going to school out in Providence, build a significant base of youth willing to fight against capitalism on a scientific socialist basis. I think that's the primary goal at this point, to really find another, you know, expand the organization as much as possible, to really, you know, find those people that are understanding and have had very similar sort of material developments, to make them to make them susceptible to understanding that the capitalist system is not one that's effective or that serves anyone other than the rich.
What's been the reaction since you joined, of like family, friends, and now classmates in college? What's the general? I know that's different for different people and groups, but
that's an interesting point.
Because you're open as a socialist, which is great. Social alternative seems, I think, unless it's a security question of your job or something.
Yeah,
being open as a socialist is the best way to be.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. Some of my family, a lot of my family is very supportive. Most of my family is very supportive, actually. But there is a level of the primary sort of moments of reaction, so to speak, in terms of like the political sense, aren't about opposed to the politics. It's about, you know, safety and things of that sort, you know. And I kind of talk about this a bit in my Why I'm a Socialist article, is, you know, so, like, I don't want to like name people specifically, but, you know, some of my family members are just afraid of, like, you know, police brutality and things of that sort, especially of being a socialist and of the historical nature of that with like Black Panthers and things of that sort.
Right.
Cause that's often, you know, what a lot of, POC people think of when they think of socialists in the US, is the Black Panthers is kind of the first thing that comes to mind, especially in my family. It scares people a lot. It really does.
Do you have any family that were in the Black Panthers or around them?
I do not, but I have one who probably would have been, but she was too young. She was like, my grandmother was very supportive of the Black Panthers, but I think she was like 9 towards their fall.
Mm-hmm.
So not yeah. really yeah. capable.
In Worcester, by the way?
In Worcester, yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting, yeah. The so what about, like, that's good to hear your family's generally supportive. Mine wasn't. But what about...
my family, like, was socialist from the get-go.
There
so
you go. Mm. Good.
El Salvador, Cuba, come on, what else?
How about classmates now freshman? Now, you're brand new, freshman year, yeah. first semester. You survived and everything, yay. Yeah. But what's the political side?
It's very interesting. It's much less politically toxic than I expected it to be.
Oh, great.
Because I go to an Ivy League school. I was expecting a lot of, you know, the vicious, not vicious in, like, the literal, like, the physical sense, but, you know, like, the politically hostile, you know, yeah. I'm with her, Clintonite type
yeah,
of people.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's actually been significantly not like that. It's
wow.
been significantly still very liberal, of course, but left-leaning, you know, a lot of Bernie support, that type of thing. People that, you know, think genuinely, some of them genuinely think that they're socialists themselves, mm-hmm. despite their, you know, very... social democratic views and, you know, right-wing aspects to them. So it's been actually genuinely kind of positive. And when it hasn't been positive, it's been not so much hostile, but more smug, as we were sort of talking about on
yeah.
the way over.
Yeah, indifference.
Yeah, kind of smug indifference.
Yeah.
A few libertarians that think it's kind of, like, hilarious that I exist, so to speak.
I think it's hilarious they exist.
Yeah, I agree.
They're riding on a cloud. I mean, this is nothing to libertarianism.
So lost.
Yeah.
So lost.
It's just incredible.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go live on my farm in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of.
Was that thing on
disconnection?
Yeah, this thing on Facebook.
So as far as I'm good. I don't care about the whole society.
Yeah. Anyway, I won't try to tell the Facebook joke, but about libertarianism. It was like three famous right wing politicians walk into a bar, drink the liquor, which is unregulated, and they all die.
Yeah. It's Rand Paul.
Yeah.
Rand Paul. Paul Ryan. Yeah. And who's the last one?
Yeah, I can't remember. I couldn't remember the people. That's
Ayn Rand.
Ayn Rand. Oh, she's Ayn resurrected.
Rand,
good.
Rand Paul Ryan walk into a bar. Yeah.
They all have a drink.
Yeah.
And they die.
And they all
it's
die.
It's unregulated.
Yeah.
Libertarianism.
Yeah. Rand Paul, the hardcore libertarian.
No love lost.
Yeah.
Ryan.
Well, every libertarian I run into, they have this thing where somehow the military gets exempted from their philosophy.
Yeah, it's
wild. That's a big socialistic type organ. I don't think it really is, but I'm paraphrasing.
Apparently that doesn't.
That gets tons of government money, that they're okay with that.
Apparently that doesn't count as a state.
Yeah.
Having armed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Having armed men that can gun you down at any point and coerce you doesn't count as a state, apparently.
Yeah, but on the other hand, it makes sense, right? Because it's the capitalists know, you know, that's their club. Like, we're going to discuss state revolution.
Yeah,
that's like what's happening now with Honduras, you know what I mean?
Mm. Exactly.
Yeah, they had a call, please, army guy, fight for the people, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Don't take your orders. And a lot of them did. Some of them did, but a lot of them didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good. Well, I was going to go the opposite way. In State and Revolution by Lenin, the Lenin quotes Engels saying the state reduced to its essence is special armed bodies of men.
Mm-hmm.
The military, the police, the court system, and its, you know, cops that take care of that.
Yeah.
That is the essence of what the state is, really. And it's a coercive, extremely violent thing that holds capitalism together. Because if you didn't have that, say you were brought before a judge, but there was no police, no army, no court, army, police, whatever.
You would just leave.
Or you might be curious.
I see a sad example. The other
Let me just finish the thing real quick. Sorry. So the judge would say, you'd say to the judge, "Hi, judge. I'm here because somebody told me it was wrong for me, because I was really cold and I don't have a place to stay, to go stay in that empty building or that empty house." Judge would say, "Of course, private property." Then that's when I leave. I say, "Okay, see you later, insane person."
I have
to stay
who
warm.
Who wants me to live?
The other day, what was the New Year? The 24th was a Saturday.
Christmas Eve.
So I go in, I go to the gallery, because I work next to the Galleria, so I go there to Sarku Japan, which is like the Japanese teriyaki rice.
In the food court?
In the food court.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a guy that I know him from going to the Salvation Army sometime. I know he's homeless.
Yeah.
He's there, bought something, and all these security guards start rounding him, like going around, and I just hear the head
Christmas
guy
Eve.
Who's giving the orders saying, He's been here for 8 hours. He's loitering, even though he's eating. Oh. Or somebody bought him something. I don't know what it was.
What's wrong with?
And they literally just round him up. One person was like, I don't know. I don't want to go there because he might punch me. You know what I mean? And then he was surrounded by five other guards, including the cop. Then he's leaving protest, and he's like, you know what, blah, blah, you know, all these curse words. I get it. I'm like,
yeah,
I'd be cursing too. And I know he's homeless. He's and they're kicking him out in the cold.
Mm. Yeah, freezing cold.
Freezing cold.
That's a good segue, but let's maybe a couple of things.
And this is Christmas Eve. Bah, yes, humbug.
Well, reminding me of your rent thing. Christmas was not a good Christmas for you.
I'm over here eating. I'm disgusted. I'm like, that's it. I'm boycotting the Galleria Mall.
This was not a good Christmas for you.
Exactly.
Wait, was there anything good that happened in Christmas? You were with your mom, right?
Me and my mother.
Yeah.
And my cousin.
Yeah. Good food.
My little nephew, niece. Huh?
Good food, baby?
Yeah.
That's good.
We had a la paella.
I can't believe this. I just can't believe the landlord.
But then after we
I can't believe the landlord would do that on Christmas Day. I just can't believe that.
Yeah, that's messed up.
I mean, I don't care. I mean, obviously it still sucks if it's the day after, but I mean, this is just still.
Yeah.
It's just the principle.
Oh, man. I'm still processing this, as they say.
Hold on. He wrote it. It says right here, the date.
Does it say Christmas?
12/20.
Oh, and he waited 5 days.
So he waited to deliver it to
thanks
you.
Thanks a lot, man.
Dated. Three of them. There's three of them.
That's
the sister,
terrible.
The cousin, and him. I won't mention names. He might evict me. No, sir. Then there's another one here where it says, effectively immediately, the use of any electric plug-in space heaters is prohibited for safety reasons. If the gas heaters in your apartments do not work, please notify the landlords. Any continued use of plug-in space heaters will be terms of the eviction.
Wow.
Wait a minute. You only gave me we don't have any space, gas heaters. That's the whole reason why we're using electric heaters.
Yeah.
So I took that to the gas assistance thing, and there's a lawyer there or a counselor that took a copy of it and said if they try to evict you because you're still using an electric heater while they didn't install, because that's supposedly why they're going up on rent to install the gas heater. I'm gonna have this as a copy. You come back to me. I'll send an inspector.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So I'm not stupid either.
So what is this gas? Natural gas they're gonna put in?
Natural gas. Bottom floors, they have this, like, central, you know, they get heat just by turning on the, you know, natural gas, whatever.
Yeah.
But we don't upstairs. We had that, I told you, the A47. It was an oven that had a side heater. But that oven is gone.
I know those.
And ever since, he's like, we'll give you space heaters.
So is it cold right now in your place?
Oh, we got to put on the heat. We put on the oven at 380. Yeah. And we boil big, you know, water, so it kind of like steams the place up. So it's, you know, and then the heaters. It's the way we're, you know, living right now.
The electric heaters?
Electric heaters.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
So if he says anything, he's still using, that's the term for eviction. Well, what gas heaters? Look how we're living.
There's no heat. Yeah, so it's a code violation.
So what do you want me to do?
Yeah exactly. And
so you're contradicting yourself. You're saying you're going to evict me, but I don't have a gas heater for me to notify you to fix.
Yeah. Well, just so, I mean, we're going to get into this a little more, but... just so people know, our listeners
know,
from wherever. We're living
in the modern day Flintstones here.
We're living in the coldest record cold. I mean, they're breaking records now here in New England, which is always cold anyway in the winter. And so you're having like basically no real heat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the coldest winter ever so far. I mean, winter that's breaking records. I don't know if it's going to be the coldest winter overall, but yeah, this is really horrible. And we're going to talk about that later, talk about homelessness and so on. But let's finish up real quick with Jai. And I know there's a lot more to talk about because it's complicated stuff, like you said. But it's interesting you got transitional program, one of the first things you read outside of the new member education thing.
It's not one of the first things
Not one of the first. Okay, sorry.
I actually read it decently recently.
But you liked it.
I liked it a lot. Yeah. It was
I had the same reaction.
One of my favorites.
It was my first thing I read, but I had the same reaction. Now, other thing... I guess we covered it. I mean, we covered everything I want to cover. Is there anything you want to say that we didn't cover?
No.
Yeah, it's a process. Why becoming a socialist? And you've been doing great work in Worcester.
Thank you.
I hope you're enjoying your vacation. But there'll be some political stuff.
Yeah.
You don't go back to school till like mid January, right?
Yeah, January 20th.
I don't know how much we'll be doing in early January, but hopefully some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you can make it to the show.
Glad to be here.
And hope you can come out again. And I know you're going to stick around. It sounds like I'm like saying leave. I'm not. Yeah. Okay, that's enough, Jai. I'm just saying, I just want to get that out there.
Yeah.
Why don't we take a quick break, quick musical interlude. I'll play that song where Marx and Engels are mentioned, mm-hmm. and then maybe the Fugees. Maybe we'll save the Fugees for later. And you're listening to Social Style Trainer Radio on WMFO 91.5 FM, Tufts Free Form, commercial free, community based radio. Social Alternative Radio is a little of that community slice. And we are also known as Tufts Educational Radio. I like that one too. And stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Have you ever worn the mask? Yeah. 1 2 1 2.
M to the A to the S to the K. Put the mask on the face just to make it next day. Feds be hawking me, jokers be stalking me. I walk the street and camouflage my identity. My posse in the Brooklyn wear the mask. My crew in the Jersey wear the mask. Pick up kids doing boogie woogie wear the mask.
Yeah, everybody wear the mask, yeah. But how long will it last?
I used to work at Burger King, a king taking orders. Punching my clock, now I'm wanted by the manager. Souping me up, saying,
you're a good worker. How would you like a quarter raise? Move up to the register. Large in charge, but you gotta be a spy. Come back and tell me who's bagging my fries. Getting high on company time.
Hell no, sirree. Wrong MC. Why should I be a spy when you're spying me? And you see what you thought you saw but never seen. You missed the last move. Checkmate, crown me king. Pull my 22 pistol, whip them in his face. Higher, now I'm fired. Sober, now I'm wired. Eyes pitch red, but the beat bop my head hit the streets for relief. I bumped into feds, I got kidnapped, they took me to D.C. Had me working underground building missiles for World War III.
M to the A to the S to the K. Put the mask on my face just to make it next day. Brothers be gaming, ladies be claiming. I walk the street and camouflage my identity.
My posse uptown wear the mask. My crew in the Queens wear the mask. Pick up kids with the Tommy Hill wear the mask.
Yeah, everybody wear the mask, but how long will it last? I thought he was the one done. I was stung on by his lips. Taking sips of an amaretto sour with a twist. Shook my hips to the baseline. This joker grabbed my waistline. Putting pressure on my spine, trying to get elbow to one. I backed the ball from then I caught him. With 5 fingers to his face. I had to put him in his place. This kid's invaded my space. But then I recognized the smile, but I couldn't place the style. So many fronts in his mouth. I thought he was the golden child. Then it hit me, that's three from off the street around my grand. I haven't seen him since 15 when he got booked for doing scams. I tried to walk away, but he wouldn't let me leave. He ran him quick behind me asking, yo, what happened to my nigga Steve? Steve was like this kid I went with back in grammar school. I chuckle, knucklehead, I seen him yesterday. He's busted, so who you checking for now? Probably some intellectual. I kept the conversation straight, but he kept trying to make it sexual. Then his old lady tried to play me, waved her hands up in my face. Yo, I told her check your man, cause bitch, you acting out of place.
M to the A to the S to the K. Put the mask on my face just to make it next day. Brothers be front, then they be running. I walk the street and camouflage my identity. My posse in the Bronx wear the mask. My crew on the aisle wear the mask. Stick up kids rolling in the Omni wear the mask.
Yeah, everybody wear the mask, but how long will it last?
3 a.m. in the morning, on the boulevard. I'm still at large, engaged with my entourage. Me and Godfather in the 67 Dodge. I stepped out and looked, then post up my guard. Searching for my car that was stolen from Scotland Yard. My first instinct was to check the Chop Shop garage. As I rung the bell, someone tapped me on my back. I turned around and looked, it was a rookie in the mask. He said, I got an itch on my trigger. Don't move, nigga, I'm taking you for murder. See, cops are two faces like two laces on my Reeboks. My knees knock as I step back for a clear shot.
Yo, did you shoot him?
Nah, kid, I didn't have the balls. That's when I realized I'm bumping too much Biggie Smalls.
To the S to the K, put the mask on your face just to make the next day. Runners be beefing, cops be beefing, brothers be scheming, and should be teaming. Jokers be smoking and staying broken. Bitches be teasing and money squeezing. Niggas be creeping, baby mothers be weeping. I walk the street and camouflage my identity.
My posse in the Haiti wear the mask. My crew in Jamaica wear the mask.